Hello, this is Chris Kester with Hannah Cratofill with the University of Dayton History Department's Arcade Project. I'm here with George Schurer. George, would you like to state your name and your age, please?
My name is George Schurer, Jr., and I'm 93 years old.
93. Also, we're at 10 Wilmington Place in Dayton, Ohio. Today is March 3rd, 2020. So, George, where did you grow up?
Born and raised right here in Dayton, Ohio.
Any specific part of Dayton?
West Side. All over West Side. We were very poor, and we used to move every time the rent was due. I'd always tell everybody that. We moved quite often.
Yeah. What did your parents do?
My father was a laborer, and he kept studying, and he got himself a job as a metallurgist at Acme Pattern and Tool in Dayton. And that's what he was doing when he retired, still working at Acme.
So you've lived in Dayton your entire life then?
Except when I was in the Army.
And when were you in the Army?
1944 to 1947. I think that's what my discharge is. I have to look.
All right. So in regards to the arcade, what was your first memory of the arcade?
It was a very nice place, pretty as it could be. And memories of it, we used to run through it. You could go in from Main Street, run to Ludlow, and come out the other end. We used to play down there quite a bit. They had nice places to get an ice cream cone. Because Dayton had, at the time, one of the most famous ice cream places, Jim City Ice Cream. I don't know if you heard of Jim City. They were right there. The company was on 3rd Street. And they had some great ice cream, good flavor. Yep.
And so what did you go to the arcade when you were an adult as well?
Every place you had to go just about took you through downtown Dayton back in those days. And you just automatically went through the arcade because everything you could want was on sale in the arcade, all kind of shops, things like that. The women had their... what you call them, furriers and things like that in the arcade. And there were places that had women's, my mother used to send me after things that were unmentionable, and I had to get embarrassed going there to get them. And then up on the second floor were the doctors. Dr. Veer was one of our doctors. She was a German. She wasn't a refugee. She was over here during the war, and she stayed. But Dr. Veer was up on the second floor, and that's the first place I ran into any kind of an obstacle at the arcade. Because in those days, when we would get ready to get on the elevator, they would tell you, stairway to the right, please. And you had to get off the elevator and walk around and up the steps to get upstairs and make sure you came back down the same way you went up. And at the Kresge's, the 10-cent store, had a soda fountain, not a soda fountain, a counter that sold milkshakes and the like. And if you ordered a milkshake, you can bet your bottom dollar you wouldn't be sitting at the counter to drink it. You were told that you had to take that either outside or walk around inside the arcade to drink it.
So what years did they do that, and did they ever stop?
They did that all of my young life and well up into the time I was married. And I was married in 49, and when I came back home from the service, I remember I used to get off from work and stop there because they had a great delicatessen in there that sold some nice sandwiches. And I'd take a sandwich home in the evening or some ice cream, stuff like that, and I'd get them right there, but they'd always wrap them up and give to you in a bag to take with you. We could never stop and eat it in there. And it was a nice place to go, except for the fact that you were always told you can't sit down at the counter and you can't do this and you can't do that. Yep.
So did you have any children?
Yep, I had 1, 2, 3. Kimmy, Shelley, George. I had 3 of them. My oldest daughter passed away about 2 years ago. She was mentally and physically retarded. And my other 2 are brilliant, I call them. My son had his PhD from all those name schools on the East Coast. My daughter has her. What does Shelley have? The president followed her to all the good schools. She got her degree from Wharton, Yale, and another place she got a degree from. And she rose it in the Prudential from being just, went in there as an assistant, not a recorder, what's her card say? Anyway, she's now what they call let me find my billfold. What is her title? But she goes all over the world for Prudential. She's a principal. That's what her job title is, principal. And then my grandson went to Harvard.
It's fine if you can't find it.
Huh?
It's fine if you can't find it.
My grandson is a... He went to Harvard. He and my daughter have it every year when it comes time for the Yale-Harvard game. Marcus is about 6'10", and he fences. He was on the fencing team. And I always ask him, it surprised me that he was fencing. I said, you're such a big target to hit. He says, yeah, but look at my reach. I said, well, okay, I hadn't thought about that. He said, I got a reach on everybody. So he does that. But then after getting all his education and things, my father-in-law had given him an old saxophone that he had when he was growing up. Well, Marcus learned to blow that saxophone. He blows that all over the world. Pardon me. All over the world he blows that. Shelley and Marcus, and Mark, rather, her husband, they are, I keep calling them, they're top of the world with all the things that they've learned in school. He's a accountant and whatever else. And they drive back and forth through here. I'm sorry. They drive back and forth through here like they'll be through here next week because Elizabeth, their daughter, she's in 11th grade at 6'5". All of them are big. She's made the all-state volleyball team for her school. And I watched her grow up. And the house I just sold before I moved in here, I put a mark on the wall as she'd gone up. And finally, before I left, I was putting her mark up over my head. And I'm 6'3", and she's 6'5" already in 11th grade. And so she's on the team. They played over in Sweden. They played all over Europe. They go to, I don't know what the name of the school is right this minute, but I'm really proud of Mark, my daughter, Elizabeth, Marcus. They are some special people to me, and they come to visit all the time. They come in. In fact, I'll digress a little bit. When I got ready to sell my house, I had a house, another house, another house. And I had 4 automobiles, and I had all the things that I wanted to keep in the house. Well, I gave my daughter the key, and she got her hands on all of my paperwork, and she has not let me see a spreadsheet to show me what we cleared off of selling the house. And I don't know when she's going to let me see all this. She just called me this morning to tell me they'll be coming through here on their way somewhere east of here for Elizabeth's volleyball tournament. But she won't tell me anything about what the money came out of selling the house. I still think she's tricking me.
So with one, amazing children.
Okay.
But with your kids, did you ever take them to the arcade?
Who? My kids?
Yeah.
They went through there, but they never, it had changed by then. It had changed to the way it is now. You can go in there and sit down and have a milkshake or something. Yep. But they don't come to Dayton often enough to go down there.
Oh, like when they were children, would you take them down to the arcade?
Oh, yeah. When they were little, they'd go to the arcade because we never stopped going to the arcade. We just knew what the conditions would be when we got there. Yeah, because they still had Gem City ice cream, which to me was the best ice cream in the world. That's good. And my doctor was there, Dr. Fear. And what else was there? When I'd get off from work, heading home, I rode the bus from the Wright-Patterson home, and I'd get downtown, stop at the arcade, and bring a sandwich, bring something that would be a routine. But I would never stop going in the arcade. I just knew that there was a place I had to put my elbows on the bar and not sit down at the bar.
Mm-hmm. Now, did you ever go down during Christmas time?
Yes.
Can you tell me about that?
They had a big Christmas tree in the middle. Do you know much about going in the arcade when it didn't have all it? I don't know. The last time I was in there, it seemed like they had a bunch of cluster in there, more than it used to be in the center. It was always empty, and you could stand up on the balcony up there and look down. It was really pretty at Christmas time. Yeah, it was really crisp, really pretty. And like I say, I had a lady doctor, Dr. Catherine Veer, V-E-R. She was on the second floor up there, and to go to her office, we had to climb up the steps. That was all strange when I think back on it. The elevator was right there, but they always tell me to stairway to the right.
So when you were at the arcade, were the majority of the customers there white or black?
Well, they were just like the city population. They were people. It didn't stop people from going to the arcade. No way. They had all the good food. That had all of the ladies' clothing shops, ladies' fur coats and the ladies' gowns and things. They were in the shops inside. From the outside, it was Gallagher's drugstore and the shoe repair place and the movie theater. And that one block, there was everything you could ever want to do downtown. In fact, this place here was the Dayton Insane Asylum back in those days. And my grandmother, in August of 1950, my grandfather had to bring her out here to this place as a patient. And I had just bought a car, had never driven before in my life. And he saw me coming and he was just floored. I was driving a car, but he said, I got to take my grandmother's name was Amanda. He said, I got to take Mandy out to the Dayton State Hospital. She's being admitted out there today. Oh, boy. So we got in the car, and I didn't have any driver's license or nothing. Drove them out here, and the entryway wasn't where it is now. It was the entry to this place used to be around here where Belmont School is. The entry, you went up Wilmington Avenue and made a sharp right into the parking lot. Well, I came out here with when I was married that year, and we stayed upstairs at my grandparents' house, me and my wife. And so when I took Mama in here, she says to me, my nickname, everybody called me Sherry. Sherry, I don't like this place. Take me home. That's what she says to me. And I said, Mommy, I can't take you home because Pop's in there getting the paperwork signed up and you're going to stay here for a while. Well, that just tore me up so much I couldn't stay no more. I had to leave them out here. But me and a man that stays here right now, we had a big argument, and he won't speak to me anymore, and I will never speak to him again. Call me something bad name. because he claimed this place was an army camp. I said it was an insane asylum. He said it was an army camp. I got all the information to show him, but he stopped speaking to me. I won't even look his way right this minute because he went that route with me. He's a retired doctor. He had an office on 3rd and 5th and Main Street when he retired. But now he claims that place was an army camp. And I got a book from the Ohio Historical, whatever the thing is. It calls this place, what used to be the insane asylum is now 10 Wilmington Place. Plain English, it says it. He won't let me show him that. I opened it up on the table down there in the dining room. He will not look at that. He just won't look my way anymore. I'm glad about it. It's a good thing. But I think about my grandmother coming out here, and I think about the last time I saw her. What did he say? Irony of irony. 2 Christmases ago, there was a Christmas parade downtown Dayton. And some lady was standing at the curb with me, and she says, "Have you ever been into that courthouse building?" I said, "A long time ago. This has been the last time I went in there." She says, "If you ever go in there again, go in there and up those winding steps, and you get to the top, and there's a table with a big, humongous book. That's the only thing up there at the top of the steps." At Christmas parade, I went up there. And there was this book. I opened the book and looked. It had Dayton Insane Asylum. This was the book with everybody's name that was ever in the place. And I flipped through the book. Came up August the 5th, 1985, I think it said. 85, whatever it was. And there was Amanda Black. Her name was on the book. And I sat there and just boo-hooed before I turned around and came back downstairs. But she was in that book that they got down there. It was there 2 years ago. I don't think they moved it out. But that was always something with me and my grandmommy.
So back to the arcade. Did different races go to different shops at the arcade?
They wouldn't know. The women were not allowed to try on the dresses. I remember that. My wife, when she got ready to get married and had ordered that gown that she wore, she didn't get to try it on. She had to take, hopefully, the right measurements for the dress. She hoped that it was right, and it was. Yep. And she was get off the subject. She's an alumni of UD, and I listened to her on this thing every day because she sang in the choir, and she had a voice that would just make you boo-hoo. I do that every day. Oops. Do that every day, listening to her sing on this thing. Yep.
That's great.
And the year she passed away a year ago, for the UD, what you call that, alumni book, where's mine? Latest one, whatever the book is, the man took, he was at the end of the school year before last, he was coming out to the house to interview her to put in the alumni book. And when he came, and she hadn't had her hair done or nothing, she says, "You're not taking any pictures of me, and you're not going to interview me," and she didn't let him. So he interviewed me, and I was in that one book. It was around this chair someplace. But my wife, that's the one that should have interviewed her, because she was on the rifle team, the basketball team, and then the choir at UD.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's great.
And I'm getting away from arcade.
That's perfectly fine, George. Were the majority of workers at the arcade, were they white or black?
White. They were white. Yep.
Do you remember any African Americans having jobs at the arcade?
If they were there, they worked after they closed the stores as janitors or whatever, custodians. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you've talked a little bit about this, But did you ever feel discriminated against at the arcade? And if so, what time periods?
Well, the reason I didn't, I guess, I went to Roosevelt back in the 40s. Roosevelt High School then was just as segregated as anything in the world, and I was just used to it. My parents had gone to Roosevelt when Roosevelt was built, and they had been subjected to that same kind of feeling. And Roosevelt, when they tore it down to build what's there on 3rd Street now, I went with the photographer from the Dayton Daily News inside the building as they were tearing things out, and he was talking about what was and wasn't in the school. I said, no, there's a swimming pool in here. The swimming pool, they had two Olympic-sized pools, one for blacks and one for white. And it says it over the door in the tile, the words. And both of them were Olympic-sized pools, had seats all around them. But when they built the school and saw that there were African-Americans coming to the school, they blocked it all up. You had to come in from a different direction to get into that. And nobody, I went there from the 7th grade to the 12th when I graduated, and I never knew that wall led to that door. When they knocked that wall in, there was that pretty marble entryway that says girls swimming pool. Well, the only girls that swam in it were black girls and the black guys. We couldn't go in the other pool. I didn't know that all that good stuff existed till they were tearing that place down. And that, and the other thing up third, everything on 3rd Street, as you look back on it, you just see something that makes you feel real bad. Gem City ice cream, some of the best ice cream in the world, they sold it in the arcade. They had that's the place I, on the way home from work, stopped there to get some ice cream from Gem City. But they owned all the property all the way almost to Roosevelt High School on 3rd Street, making ice cream. To light there, you had to be able to fight or run fast. And on 3rd Street, now I'm divesting again a little bit, but all the restaurants up there close to Roosevelt High School, we couldn't go in the cafeteria to eat at Roosevelt. But going up the street, there were signs that says if you were black and you wanted a Coney Island, you couldn't go in the front door of none of those buildings. You had to go around the back, and there was a window cut in every one of them. You ordered from the window in the front, and you had to go around the back to pick it up. And that's the way they had good Coney Islands, good food. But if you wanted any, you had to go around the back, and they handed it out the back window to you.
So with the arcade, would you consider the arcade better or worse or just about the same as these other establishments when
they
it comes
were all
to?
The same. Up and down 3rd Street, they were the exact same. And they had all the big movie houses downtown, and they were all the same way. You only could go one way, upstairs. But then they said all that was Jim Crow? Yeah. And there's a law that I didn't know that till this came up, and I started reading about, I didn't know anything about Jim Crow. I never heard the words until here recently.
So when you've had these different types of experiences, were you getting discriminated against from the workers at the arcade, or did you ever get any from the customers at the arcade?
Some customers, they would say something to you. If you were caught sitting on one of those stools when you get delivered a milkshake or something, their customers would remind you. Yep, they would remind you real quick.
Did the workers ever remind you?
No, they let the customers do it. They didn't. I can't remember ever having somebody on that side of the counter say anything. They may have said something to the clerk that may alert the clerk to come and say something to you, but I never remember them saying anything.
Gotcha. Now, switching a little bit outside of the arcade, You were talking to me earlier about how you knew W.S. McIntosh.
Yes.
Would you like to talk about that a little bit?
Don't care at all. His son's name is Jay, J-A-Y, and he was, now he didn't run around with the rest of the kids. We all lived in Soda Bass, but I don't know who he ran around with at all. Because his dad, it seemed like his dad was killed.
Are you talking about W.S. McIntosh? Uh-huh. Yeah, he got killed in the mid-70s. He got shot.
Shot down on Main Street. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, he was, he lived two doors down the street from us. We lived at 1046 Robeson Place. Yeah, but I think back on all the things in Dayton. I went to Roosevelt High School. And Roosevelt, the first day I was there, I'm digressing again. I was just looking at my book right over here someplace the other day, yesterday, the yearbook. The first person I met was a girl named Pat Moomaw. And me and her were getting our paperwork signed up to come into the school. We were called into Miss Roth's office, assistant principal, to be told there'll be none of that stuff in this school. None of that, I want you to know. And that's what she told us. For the next 6 years, Pat and I were good friends. But she told us it wouldn't be none of that. And I didn't know what the heck she was talking about. That's what's funny. Because when I went to grade school, that's really strange. I hadn't thought about that till now. I went to Willard School, a school on the west side down Germantown Street. Willard School was segregated, but it was, back when we went to Willard School, it was mixed. The teachers were mixed. I think that was the first school to have black teachers in the city of Dayton. Yep.
Now, in 1964, do you remember the protests at the Arcade Barbershop?
Mm-hmm. I remember of it. I wasn't down there demonstrating or whatever they call it in it. No.
But can you talk to me just a little bit about it? Just what you recollect, even if you weren't there?
All I recollect was it wasn't a place for me to go. Because I knew that if anybody got in trouble, if you got in trouble, your voice wasn't going to be heard. It was not going to be heard. Mm-mm.
So how about the, do you remember the protests at Reich's Department Store in 1965?
Yeah, I remember they were walking with the signs, yeah. But I don't know about what it was about. I think it had something to do with putting on clothes that you're getting ready to buy, women. But I remember vaguely that. Yeah.
Do you ever remember going to Reich's Department Store at all?
Oh, I'd go to Reich's every other day pretty much. You went to all those stores because there's no place else to go.
Would you get treated better at the arcade or at Reich's?
That's funny. I never paid any attention to how I was being treated at those two places. Reich's was the better place. The only reason I say that is because that's where my mother worked, at Reich's. And at Reich's, she was hanging up clothes, putting stuff like that, and she'd always meet me there with something to stop and bring, take home when I went. But no, that's the only reason I would say Reich's. Because at Reich's, seems like McIntosh got into something right there near Reich's. Right there near Reich's.
He led a protest because there was a labor dispute. They were discriminating against hiring black workers.
Yeah, it was something like that. I know that because he was always advocating something like that. Sumter McIntosh. His wife was really quiet. He had a son named J.J. something or other.
So how, in your mind, how was the city of Dayton in regards to civil rights issues?
Well, back then I didn't pay much attention, except you know your place. You knew your place, and you knew you didn't go too far out of your place. And of course, if you did, you had your parents first to go through before you had to go through anybody else. They'll say, you know better than that. You should know better than that. Yeah.
So can you talk to me a little bit about the Dayton race riots in 1966?
1966, I lived out in the country in 1966, and I didn't go into town when all that was going on. Yeah, I lived out in Jefferson Township, and that almost caused some riots. You know, things haven't changed much. I'm going to divest again. The sheriff's department, behind me, we had 2.5 acres of yard in the back down by the creek. And the house that had a backyard that came up to ours, they had a little problem with their oldest son. And he came over and claimed the hill and down into the creek on my backyard, as he claimed that as his. And I went out there and said something to him about it. Next thing I know, he's over in my yard, pow, 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 shooting the pistol. I call the sheriff, and the sheriff comes out. He's investigating me like I'm a criminal. And when I went back to the sheriff's office, oh, boy, I've forgotten some of this stuff. I went back to the sheriff's office, and the sheriff didn't answer, had the door locked. This was out in Jefferson Township. We had its own independent police department. He came and finally unlocked the door and stood on one side with his hand on his pistol, and the deputy was on another side with his hand on a pistol. And he asked me, what do you want, boy? I never get over that. Never invited me to come into the building. Never. And that was in recent years.
What year would you think that would be?
That would be maybe about 8 or 9 years ago. I have to think of it, which car was I driving. It had to be 8 or 9 years ago. Yeah. Because it used to be, when we first moved out there, they had black policemen. And then all at once, we were under Montgomery County Sheriff's Department. We had sheriffs out there. But then everything was something different. But then when I called the police to come out there about the boy out in my backyard shooting a pistol, he come out there investigating me like I was the criminal, walking around, looking all over the place, asking me about things in my house that he didn't have any business looking at. Yep, there were some weird things going on.
You know, speaking of living situations, you said that you were born and raised in West Dayton. Would you like to talk about your childhood in West Dayton?
I grew up on Western Avenue, in the Western Avenue area. Oh, boy, I'll go into some more things. My mother used to make sure I took care of my two sisters as best I could, because I wasn't the bully, and I was always running from the bullies. And one night, there was something going on over at Roosevelt High School again, always there. And mother told me to go over there and get your sister and bring her home. And I went over there to get my sister, Edith. And on the way, before we got around the corner off 3rd Street, heading down Grosvenor toward our house, here come the police with sirens going, and we did the natural thing. We started running toward home. Well, when we got home and I hit the porch, my mother and dad were sitting on the porch. The cop was right behind me when he pulled his car up to the curb, jumped out. I ran all over. My father was sitting there with his feet up on the railing on the porch, and I remember knocking the chair out from under him, and he said some bad words, what in the so-and-so is going on, and then after I trampled him, the cops trampled him too and snatched me out of the house and took me downtown. They didn't take me downtown. They took me down Fifth Street to under the Fifth Street Bridge because I wouldn't tell them where the rest of the guys went. They says, you don't know your alleys like these other guys did, do you? Again, that same information, same words, those same words came up. And so it ended up, I had to go to juvenile court, and the other guys that they caught that night ended up going to juvenile court and had to go to detention home in Columbus. And the only reason I knew they were there, we all played softball together, and we went to Columbus to play the, what they call them, the prisoners. And they, the ladies had to sit in a cage, like a some chain link fence around this thing to watch the game, and we played the game. And the guard asked, when did you get out? You said, everybody knows you in here. Everybody's speaking to you. When did you get out? My wife was embarrassed. Yep, all those little things just happened like that.
So when you grew up and you got married, did you remain in West Dayton? You said you went to the township for a while. Where did you live?
When we were married, we bought a house on... Everything is a different episode. We bought a house in Edgemont part of Dayton. All right. We went and got the... Went to Dayton Power and Light to get the lights changed over to our name and all that stuff. And went to the Citizen Federal Loan Company to get the paperwork for our deed thing filled out. And the man inside hollered, I told you so-and-so it, no loans on the west side, no more. I said, I wonder who he's talking about. But that's what the Citizen Federal said about us getting a loan to move there. Then when we moved in, the people across the street would throw bottles through our windows. This is over in Edgemont. We moved into Edgemont, 373 Bolander Avenue, and the people were throwing rocks at the house, calling us all kind of names, and we endured there. And pretty soon, I didn't know this thing about buying a house. The realtors got a thing they call block busting. Then we were a blockbuster. This is a blockbuster. We can get him in there. We got the whole block to sell. And that was exactly what happened. We bought it, and next thing you know, for sale signs were all over the place, and the houses were all sold in little or no time. But that's where we lived in Edgemont, right close, not far from here. Yep. Yeah, but the man, I remember all these names. His last name was Och, O-C-H. But he was being chewed out, and I bet they were sitting down laughing while he was chewing him out so I could hear it. I told you there are no more sales over there, not any. Yep. But we, and doing all that, people threw rocks through our window in the house on Bolander, and the police would come out there, and they just walk around like, you don't need a house like this. This is your house. That's the way they'd walk around the house, acting like we had done something to whoever did it to us. But we learned to live with all that and moved out into the township. That was something, too. We moved out there, and there were no people like me out there at the time. All it was big farms. And the man was selling it, McLean's Subdivision, he called it. And I heard those words all over again. I told you not to let any loans out in that area. I'm sitting outside there waiting for the paperwork to be finished. But they were saying the same thing then. But the good part about it, we built that house. We didn't build that. We bought that house. But then we sold it and built the house. The house we built was like for, what did we pay for that, build that house for? At the time, about $18,000, and it sold for almost $200,000 when we finished. Because it was a big, it's pretty house. It has a beauty. I hated to leave it. It was a, My basement would make any house look like it was something else. Basement, I finished it with carpeting, my bar, and I just thought of that. My bar with all my liquor is still down there. It was sold with the house. Oh, because I stopped drinking some time ago. And my bookcase full of all my school books, they're gone. I hadn't even given that a thought to now.
So where did you go to college?
Right at UD.
And when did you graduate?
1956. I think that's the right year. My wife graduated from UD in 50. No, she graduated in 49 because I was still in the service, I think. I was just looking at all this stuff. I was looking at this yesterday. That's our class of 1944. We had a class reunion, and that's how big our class was.
He's talking about Roosevelt High School right now.
Yeah, that's Roosevelt High School down the street. It's not too far.
So what was your job when you were still working?
Well, I was a financial manager in the life support systems project office, they call it. And that's another case of some funny things. For some reason or other, things just seem to work out for me, and I don't know why. I worked in a place that didn't want me when I was forced on them. And one year, it snowed real hard, and only two people made it into work was me and Elsie, a lady that worked in the office. Well, nobody was showing me how to do the job at the time, and I had bumped somebody else to move into that job. Well, Elsie, and that one day when we were snowed in, she told me where everything was that I should have known about where it was. We just talked about everything. Well, it proved to be her downfall because they just railroaded her right out of the place, and she ended up in California. I bought her something to go on top of her car to carry her luggage in. But she taught me a lot, and that day it snowed. And when they found out she taught it to me, it was too late for them then because I just took over my office. It was mine because I was the chief of the office, and before that they had me doing things but weren't giving me any credit for doing it. And we had this one general come in from Washington, and somebody had to always give the go over the program with him when he came. Well, General Alder came in, and I'm always joking with somebody. So since I'm the financial manager, I put on a fort coat that was all plaids and looked like a ragged thing. Get up there, and I introduce myself and start my lecture. He said, "What's this joke you playing?" Oh, he says, that financial manager wouldn't be wearing a coat like that. I said, "That's the best I can afford. They won't give me a raise around here." And that next thing I know, I got my raise I should have gotten when I first moved in there. It's all the little incidents like that move me right along. And we played poker all the time, all the guys in the office. And I think of Dr. Beers, he was a full colonel, the general. When we'd get ready to have the briefing, I'd have to brief the generals four times a year. And he'd always say, "What's George wearing today?" I'd wear a raggedy sport coat to stand up there and talk about money we needed. But we'd get the money. And it was fun after a while, because then after Elsie and Barbara Jean and two of them come out to see me now to have lunch, oh boy. But after it was some fluky thing with weather that always happened, and only one person or two people would get in there, and they showed me how to do all the things I needed to know to do my job. And from there, it was just history. I look at all the people, all the things are in my other, in the bedroom, all the things that they signed when I left. But I got lots and lots of friends. And Mr. Whalen, do you remember Mr. Whalen at UD?
Name sounds familiar.
He taught economics.
That might have been before my time.
Okay, it was a long time back. Mr. Whalen, he taught me some things about how to get along with people. He taught me something that I don't know how to even describe it, but it worked. And the next thing I know, when we had a job audit, all the guys had gotten a raise but me. And lo and behold, the guy doing the job auditing was a guy that was in my class at UD, one of my UD guys. He says, "Where's the work you do?" I says, "They took it out of the file cabinet when they knew you were coming." So the next thing I know, I hear him in there fussing and demanding to see all the records. He got all the records, and when he finished with them, had to raise me to the same level they were. And that's the way it went from then on. Everything like that just went my way for some reason. And the general coming down from Washington every quarter, we had a quarterly review, he said, "Put George on first because we know he's going to have some kind of outfit on to get us started." I'd have a plaid, plaid sport coat or anything like that. But the other guys wouldn't read the manuals. They wouldn't do none of that stuff that should have been done. And I'd do it. But no, I enjoyed my job so much before I retired. But one of the people, Dr. Beers, and I went, his wife wanted me to be a speaker at his funeral. He and I, pardon me again, were sitting next to each other at a staff meeting one evening. And something hit me, and he says, "What's the matter?" I said, "Heck, I don't know what the heck just happened." He says, "I think I do," and he called the base ambulance. And they took me to St. Elizabeth Hospital, and I stayed there about a week. I'd had a heart attack. And he instantly put the paperwork in. That's the reason I've been retired as long as I have, because he put the paperwork in to get me retired. He said, "No, we won't have any more of that." And since then, that's been, oh boy, that's been at least 25 years ago.
what was the name of the company that you worked for?
I worked with Wright-Patterson. Yep, in Life Support Systems Project Office. And when I got ready to retire, and I was just looking at all this stuff, my retirement papers were signed by Lieutenant General so-and-so, General so-and-so, and they even gave me an invitation, the certificate for my wife, and they same people signed that. She didn't like one of the things. They're a bunch of jokers later on. But they would have one of the things they said, "He has a heart attack, but we can give him another heart attack, give him Valerie," was her name, and had a cutout thing of life-size cutout of this Valerie. It says that'll take care of what kind of problems? They had a name for it. Oh, I can't think. But it was, had my retirement was over to the officers club. Everybody said, "That'll never happen. That'll never happen." Because the general, before he came to town, they would never let me eat over in the officers and the executive, as they call them, workers. I would never be allowed to eat in there. I had to. They'd all go around there, and I'd go down the other way every time. And he was there, and he said, "Where are you going?" I said, "I'm going to lunch. I can't go over there." He said, "Who says you can't go over there? Come on, we going in there." From then on, I ate in the executive dining room every day. I said, all these things just fell into my lap for some reason. Boy.
That's great. So back to the arcade a little bit.
Okay.
Why do you think the popularity of the arcade declined?
Survived?
No, declined in the 80s.
Oh, I think the law made it decline. I think it never would have declined because people were comfortable with it the way it was. And even me, that's the only way I knew it to be. Just come, go in, up the steps the way you're supposed to, and get the ice cream cone. You don't sit down. You stand with your one foot on that little step up just sitting there at the counter. And I just do that and go outdoors and eat.
So just to clarify, you think racial integration helped a little bit of white flight move away?
Mm-hmm. I don't doubt it at all. And I think they were building new houses all around Huber Heights, and all those places were springing up, and they had to have people to buy the old houses that people had been living in to move into their new houses, and that's the way they filled them all up. Yep.
Do you want to talk about suburbanization a little bit, about Huber Heights or Beaver Creek and all of these suburbs that have grown out of people moving from inside the city and moving out because?
Yep, there's one that comes to mind real fast, and I can't think of what it's called. It's over towards, oh boy, what's it? Are you familiar with anything over near Wright-Patterson area seat called, used to be, oh, what's the name of the restaurant? It has two tall timbers. It's a place called Tall Timbers, the bar. Everybody used to stop after work and go in there and have a drink before they'd head home. That was a place that the guys I worked with played poker together every other month in one of our basements. And we go over there to the Tall Timbers. That's the name of the Dingbuster restaurant, Tall Timbers. Go over to the Tall Timbers. Now, seeing me come in the place by myself, it would not have worked. With all of my gang that I ran around with at work, they see them all come in, we'd all sit down, and nobody said anything to me about it. But once I went in there before the rest of the gang got there, and somebody mentioned it, so I had to go outside, and I told them what happened. They said, we'll stop here and eat first before we go over to whoever's house it was we were going to play cards, but this will be the last time we'll go in here to eat. And that was the last of that. But then Charlie and the guys, they would do strange things in the neighborhood. Charlie Clark was one of our buyers, and his wife Bonnie. We all went to each other's house all the time. And when they were getting ready to go on a vacation that one year, they lived out in Huber Heights. And I'm living way over in over in Jefferson Township. They gave me the key to their house and wanted me to take care of their swimming pool while they're gone over in Huber Heights. Now that's going to be a no-no. I went over there, nobody home but Bonnie. Bonnie and me there, she's showing me how to do everything on that swimming pool. And I'm looking around to see how the neighbors are reacting. Yep, boy. And I think back, I had some of the best years of my life working in the life support sport, Wright-Patterson. The best people I ever worked with. And we went every place, went to all the ball games together. We played cards with each other's house, visited with each other all the time. And it was just lots and lots of fun.
Well, that's great, George. And I'd like to thank you so much for your time. I have one last question for you.
Okay.
Which is, what was your favorite and least favorite thing about living in Dayton?
Whew. Dayton, just living in Dayton was my favorite thing. I love Dayton. My least favorite one was it always seemed that wherever I went, I was given some walking rules, some rules. I can remember the first day I went to Roosevelt High School in 1936 or whatever. Anyway, Miss Roth, the assistant principal, she calls me into the office to tell me what they would have none of at Roosevelt High School, and that was fraternizing with the young ladies for me. But it turns out I didn't flirt with them. They flirted with me much as I flirted with them. I had a lot of fun with everybody, every place I've ever been. And I enjoyed people a lot. You can tell that I know. And then, like I said before, this place here is the best thing that could have happened to me.
That's great. I also kind of lied a little bit. I got more questions for you if you don't mind, George.
No, I don't mind.
So you were talking about your doctor, Catherine Veer. Was it spelled with a V or a B?
Doctor, I got one that started with a V, Dr. Veer. Catherine, she was a lady, and a B, Dr. Beers.
So B-E-E-R-S?
Just like an old glass of beer, yep.
Gotcha. Yeah. And how long was Catherine Veer, how long was she at the arcade?
No, she wasn't at the arcade. She was at the base.
Oh, gotcha. Well, yep. So Dr. Beers with a B was at the arcade.
Yep. She took care of me big time.
Also, if you can think back to any specific names of restaurants or stores that were in the arcade.
Yep. Let's see. There was, I think Thaw's was here. It may have been further down Main Street, though. Kresge's was in this, well, not this building, in the arcade building. Oh, boy, on the corners of the big buildings. Liberal Market was in there, a grocery store. And that restaurant that sold sandwiches. But all the stores in there had the fronts to them on the main streets. Because Main Street, and then had a back entrance into the arcade. And on Ludlow, same way, back entrance was in the arcade, but you can come in from the front. So if you didn't want to be insulted, you could go in the front and come out the other end.
So was there any crime at the arcade that you noticed?
No. Everybody sort of accepted it. That was it. So you live with it.
How about in your later years, did you notice any more crime in the area around the arcade?
No, only time I ever went into that area at this point in my life, was to go on over some legal papers. And that's the only time I'd be standing in the window looking down out of the sidewalk. But no, I know Dr. Beers and Veer. Dr. Veer closed her office up. Dr. Catherine Veers. That was my daughter, my oldest daughter's doctor. But she closed her place up. And going to the movies, that was always the doozy. Go to the movie, the steps, that was just crazy. You could only sit in the back two rows in the balcony. The rest of the balcony and the rest of the downstairs, you didn't go into at all anyway. But that was the way it was upstairs, but that's the best place to go hooking.
That's great. Talking about your Army experience a little bit, what was your reasoning? Why did you enlist in the Army?
Because everybody my age was already in there or getting drafted, so my buddy Kurt and my buddy Paul and myself stood there one day and decided, if we enlist, we'll get to stay together. So we enlisted 1540-0066, 67, and 68, our serial numbers. And we got on the bus to go to Columbus, where we were going to be stationed. And we got to Columbus, and we were stationed together for one whole day. One day. Kurt and I, Paul went to Fort Benning, Georgia. Kurt and I went to Fort Leonard Wood, Missouri. That's right, Kurt went with me. And what happened, and that was another tricky thing that happened. I'm talking too much. At Fort Leonard Wood, somebody in our company, while we were taking basic training, had gotten a 126 on the IQ test. They figured it couldn't be me because I looked the wrong way. It had to be someone, a guy from Gallup Police or one of these places, looked like they were white. That's what they figured. So the rest of the company went to Japan. They were gone, and me and another guy were still there because they determined that they'd made a mistake. It was me that had made the 120-something on my IQ test. So now I got a chance to go to OCS. Well, I had seen, do you remember Joe Louis? Joe Louis, Jackie Robinson. Those two guys, Jackie Robinson was a lieutenant. Joe Louis was a sergeant. They had to come around to the back gate to get a donut. And I saw all this going on, and they were talking about going to OCS. And I told the guy, if I go to OCS, that means I got to stay in another year or so. You got to sign in for a little longer. He said, yes, indeed you do. I said, well, I tell you what, take it off my name. I don't want to go to OCS. I'm not going to do that. I'm just take my...
What's OCS?
Officer Candidate School. And Jackie Robinson was one of those that stood at the back gate, where every evening the ladies, what do they call them, ladies? Not Girl Scouts, but they would have donuts and coffee at the back gate for the soldiers. And they'd be the ones there at night. Officers out there shouldn't be doing that. Officers had an officers club if you were anything but black. Well, I looked at all that, and I started weighing that, and I said, now that would mean I'd have to stay another 6 months because you have to sign on for at least 2 years plus. You got to stay in the service. So I said, I don't need that. I'm going to get out as fast as I can. And so I told him I didn't want to go to OCS. So Kurt ended up going to Japan. Paul went to Fort Benning, Georgia, and I ended up with an outfit getting ready to get on the boat going to Europe. And that's the way I got to Europe and got there first thing, started seeing, might as well be at home. The GIs had told all the Fraulines, those are the young ladies, had told all the Fraulines that at nighttime, those guys over there got a tail that comes out. If you stay away from them, they're animals. The girls told all the guys all about that. But we had to dig the latrines and stuff. It was just a mess. And then that down in South Carolina, when I was stationed down there before I went overseas, there had been a lynching. A lynching had happened, so they locked down the camp, sent us. I didn't know there were swamps down there like there. We were in a part of the camp back in the swamps. They sent us back there to stay till the noise died down with this, what had happened in town. And they wouldn't issue any passes or anything for us to go into town. But I said, now that's teaching me a lesson. I'm going to stay on camp. I'm going to stay right in this darn building. And so from there, we went through the swamps. I didn't know we had that many swamps down there in the southern part of the United States. But we went through the swamps down there going to get on this boat to go overseas. And boy, oh boy, a little puddle jumper. Yep. And when you get over there, I think I told you that. They told them, had told the Fraulines that at night the guys, their tails come out, so you be careful about them. And we had to end up digging slit trenches. You ever heard of one of those?
No.
At a bathroom. And that's what we ended up doing. We first got on the shore over there in France, and toilet paper going on a limb off of a tree that you'd cut. That was it. Until we were stationed someplace. And they had told everybody about what would happen to us when nighttime came. And they walking behind you looking to see what's going to happen to you.
So, Hannah, do you have any additional questions? Well, George, I really appreciate you spending so much time with us.
I've talked too much.
No, it's great information. So thanks again, George. I really appreciate it.
Well, I am glad that you came, and I'm glad I got to say all these. I just got it off my mind. I think I talk too much.
No, thank you.
Yeah. Oh.